I'm Frank Fontana, and this is the Human Renovation Project. For years, I transformed people's lives from the outside in, but today, we begin a new journey, transforming lives from the inside out. Welcome to the new age of the Human Renovation Project. Today on the Human Renovation Podcast, we have an amazing conversation with Karen Calabrese, an author, speaker, and one of the foremost authorities in the global raw food and vegan community. She spent decades transforming people's lives, healing illnesses, and creating life-altering experiences for thousands of people around the world. But life hasn't been all peaches and avocados for Karen. Some would say her personal life has been as raw as her eating regimen. Let's hear the human renovation story of Karen Calabrese.
What you put in your body changes how you think, how you feel, your clarity, your outlook on life, not to mention weight and degenerative diseases.
Come on out here, Karen. Karen, come on out here.
Karen, thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me as always, Frank. I love spending time with you.
Same here, Karen. You're a legend in the world of holistic health, raw veganism. You're a life transformer yourself.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know what? I am committed to doing that. I guess it was meant to be my mission here because I don't know what else to do.
Well, you've done a lot throughout your life, and I want to talk about it, because people know you today as, you know, Karen Calabrese, who's been seen on Oprah, who's traveled the globe, and who studies with the most amazing gurus in health, to come back to Chicago to share it with people here and share it around the world. But before you became that Karen, you were a model, you were a daughter, a wife, living a life that isn't what you live today.
Nothing like it.
Tell me about your journey early on and some of the struggles you went through and some of the tools you used to pull yourself out of it.
Well, you know, my whole life has been, I've been in the university of life my whole life, you know, from day one. I mean, I'm illegitimate, and back in 1947, that was a real, you know, my grandfather put my mother out of the house because she got pregnant at 17 years old with me. And
do you know who your father is?
No.
You're
no,
kidding.
No, no. So, I mean, I came into this world totally, and she tried to abort me, from what I understand. She, you know, because she was 17, she was single. I mean, and to have a biracial child in 1947 by yourself, you know, my grandfather threw her out of the house.
So you're half Italian and half
black,
okay.
And she really, really had it tough. I mean, so I started out, and then she likes to tell the story that when I was born, she crapped all over me. So can I say shit?
Sure, you can say shit. You can say fuck. You can say whatever you want.
From the day I came out of the womb, I was shit on, right? So I guess somewhere in my, because I do believe in vibrations, and I do believe in other
Agreed.
Forces.
Do me a favor, Karen, if you don't mind. Just push that mic down a little
bit.
Okay.
I do believe in other forces that from day one I thought, wow, I really got to move some stuff to make this life work for me, you know, being here. Because she didn't want me to come, so I said, okay, with understandable, you know, with the circumstances.
Is and your mother still alive today?
No, she died very young, which is what push me to do what I'm doing so much. My mother died at 46. My grandmother died at 50. And my great-grandmother died at 60. And I took care of my mother until the day she died.
Now, is this a genes thing or a lifestyle thing that they died so young?
Well, you know, I know people talk 72. About the genes. I do think we're born with strengths and weaknesses, and there were a lot of weaknesses in my family line. So I think it was a combination of both. And then everybody ate the standard American diet back then. Nobody knew any different for the most part. And then back then, frozen dinners had just come out, you know,
Was the 60s or 50s?
The 50s, it was real big. They even had frozen onions. I remember everything was frozen. So, she had a very difficult life, very, very, and she was married five times. And so we moved around. I went to eight grammar schools, four high schools. I always joke and say I should have been on a stripper pole.
Which, you know, it's funny you say that, but most people in those trying situations end up like
that. I should have been a drug addict on a stripper pole. But I all I can say is that universe, spirit, God, whatever, had a higher purpose for me, and I was able to tune into it, because I think everybody has that higher purpose.
Sure.
We're born with it. Everybody, even
it
an
is.
Ant, as far as I'm concerned, has a higher purpose. You know, and I won't say it's been always. I mean, I've had my struggles with, you know, I'm from the 60s. I woke up and had a joint in the morning, you know. I mean, I thought that's how
Do you still
people,
do?
No, I don't use cannabis for myself personally, but I certainly do recommend it to clients with terminal illnesses.
Sure.
I strongly believe in it for that. But for me, the reason I don't do it is from my spiritual standpoint, it puts a ceiling on how far you can go, because it's getting there in a false sense in my world.
So I know this is a little bit of sidetracking. We are going to go back to your story, but things like psychedelics, like ketamine, like DMT, is that in your realm of belief?
And I don't even know what DMT is.
Really? Ayahuasca?
Oh, yes. I've heard of it. As a matter of fact, the retreat I just did, there was a couple of kids that just came off of an ayahuasca retreat, and they were singing its praises, and they were telling me, blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, so I'm here to turn you into a raw foodist, and you're going to turn me into a drug addict.
I'm fascinated by the whole
To be honest with you, I'm a little frightened of it.
Yeah.
I'm frightened of all those type of drugs only because of my belief system. I feel like if you open yourself up, there are all kinds of things that can come in, not necessarily just the positive.
Sure. I've heard lots of stories, lots of positive. I would say 80% positive. And then I watched a documentary on it. And what I learned was most big celebrities and creative types have done the ayahuasca trips.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that their success is partly because they've opened up a portal in their mind to allow this creativity to be massively unleashed.
I've heard that too, especially with a lot of psychedelic drugs. For me, because I am so open with nothing, I'm definitely an empath. I pick up people's feelings.
Yeah.
I pick up everything.
Yeah.
And because I'm so high-tuned to everything, I just don't know where it would take me, to be honest with you. I have no objections to people, because I think you're supposed to make your body your laboratory and learn about yourself.
Sure.
And I think because of what I know about myself, I don't know if it's the right route for me to take.
Well, and they say that demons potentially come out.
That's what I'm saying. Yes.
Like, you
can let in the wrong energy.
Yes.
That's what worries me, because I am such an open vessel, and I think I have let in wrong energy at different points in my life before I learned how to control it. I think they might just sit there, let's get that, Karen, because we...
Well, and speaking of some of your demons, you know, I have sat through some of your courses and heard you speak before. I've read your books.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had a pretty tough childhood. You had tough teenage years and leading up to your journey into veganism and raw foods. And why don't we talk a little bit about some of your struggles that you faced and how you overcome
them? Well, you know, like I said, my mother was married 5 times. 3 of her husbands sexually abused me.
At what age?
I was probably all the way up, different ones, probably up till about 12. Hmm. But when I was very young and we lived in Baltimore, I had to be about 4 or 5, I think. You know, you block so much out, too, you know. I was gang raped by 5 guys, and they strung me up to die. They
happened at
to
what age?
5.
5 years old.
Yeah. So how do you get back from that?
Wow.
How
do you get back from that? And did after that, you saying you were sexually abused several times after that. Did it become, in your mind, in a sick way, normal? Like, did you accept it? Like, oh, I got to do this again. Like, not knowing.
You know what? I wish I could give you a better answer on that, because I think part of my success is that I'm an only child. I'm an only everything. So I've lived in my own world so much and for so long.
Yeah.
I've lived in my own world, and I've lived in a make-believe world too. So I made up a life for myself that I wanted. But then what you learn later is what you think is what you become.
Sure.
So I made up a life of what I wanted and how things should be around me. And I kind of lived in my, you come crazy. I kind of lived in my own little world. It's like.
While that stuff was happening to you?
Yeah. I think I just made up. I had pretend friends. I had, I'm really sounding nuts, right?
No, listen.
But
I don't think you're nuts, but you may soak some nuts, but. By the way, that's the name of Karen's book,
right,
in case you haven't read it yet.
Right, but anyway, so I think I've always lived in my own world, and I still do, for that matter, because if you think about it, when I became a vegan 50 years ago, everybody thought I was insane.
Yeah.
You know, nobody had even heard of the word, but I just kind of trotted along in my own world.
You weren't angry? You weren't angry that you got, you know, abused and taken advantage of?
Well, I think I drank.
Is that where, in your teenage years, you realized that?
Yeah, I think I drank and I started smoking pot and stuff like that. I think that's how I handled it. But I was always a little worried about being out of control, too, because so much of my life was out of control that I never let anything get too far.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a way to maybe try and fit in or a way to make my mind go in a different way. But I've always been so phenomenally different than everybody else that I've just always had to create my own world. And I think I started then.
Of the world you have today.
Yeah, yeah. I should have brought it. I'm so sorry. I should have brought what my mother wrote me in eighth grade, and maybe I'll send it to you.
Yeah, please do.
Because it was so beautiful. You know that little booklet you get when you're graduating that all your friends sign? And my mother wrote the most beautiful message to me, and she said, don't forget your mission, your God-given right. You're here to help people. And how she knew that when I was in eighth grade. You know, I'm going to send it to you because
it's really beautiful. Yeah.
So I've gotten these little messages all along the way. And I guess being in my own world, the outside world hasn't come in enough to tell me that it's wrong. Because 90% of the people that can't switch into my world of veganism is because they're listening to everybody else.
Sure.
Right?
Well, there's so much controversy. And we'll get to the controversy in a little bit here because I think there's still more to your story that people should know.
Yeah.
You know, after you've survived child abuse, sexual abuse as a minor, and nobody ever got arrested, nobody ever got charged, nobody ever got prosecuted because of this?
Yeah, one man who, I don't think, my grandfather went down the street because I went in and said, Mr. So-and-so, his name is Mr. Lonnie, tried to get me to come into his house again. My grandfather, who was in an illegal business, and he always wore a gun, he was in policy.
Yes.
And he went down the street, and he said, just show me the guy, you know, and I did. And he walked in, and he hit the guy over the head, and then they called the police, and I guess he got arrested. But other than that, no.
Wow. That's just fascinating to me and disgusting in so many levels.
You know how I look at it? That all of these weird, and I call them weird because it's just part of life, good, bad, and indifferent. It's made me a superwoman. Do you know what I'm saying?
I mean, you're right.
I've lost my son. My son passed away. These past few years have been very difficult. But, you know, it's like I go, okay, here's what I'm going to do next.
What else? Yeah, what else, right? When you, it's almost like, and I know, we all go through our ups and downs, and the perception outside that people who don't know you, who aren't in your inner circle, can always look at you and think, wow, you know, she's amazing and she's perfect. And look at her at 72. She's still wearing a bikini and has a supermodel body. And like, that stuff's real. But what they don't see is everything you went through. And everything you still go through, because you're still facing challenges today.
Oh, like right? You wouldn't believe these past few years have been really tough. But you know what? Once again, I think that, like I said, we're all born with strengths and weaknesses. We're all born with gifts and missions. And if you get stuck and you're not moving on, the universe kicks your butt and says, excuse me, I need you to do this.
Yeah. And it's not always done in a nice way.
It's never done in a nice way for me.
It hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what else is going to get you to wake up and move? It's like somebody that gets cancer. It's like somebody that gets a major disease. If you've gotten a little bug where you've heard you're supposed to do something different or you've heard people speak and you haven't made any changes, okay, well, we're going to have to force you to.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the way most people do, though, is when the rock drops down in front of you, you kind of sit there behind you and you wait for somebody else to come and tell you what to do instead of going inside.
Yeah. Well, you become helpless sometimes. You become victim. You know, you become a victim. Yeah.
And that's what I refuse to ever be, is a victim.
Yeah.
The word is so disgusting to me, victim.
Yeah.
That's why I don't let people know everything about me, because I don't want people to go, oh. You know, so like when I mentioned when my son passed at 30, the first thing people want to go is, oh, I'm so sorry. Well, yeah, it was sad. But you know what? He wasn't meant to be in this world any longer. And I had to learn some lessons there to move forward. Everybody did. So, victim, that word.
Infuriates you?
It just really, it's disgusting to me.
Yeah.
For me. No, I understand some people have to go through that, you know?
I think there's a period of mourning that's natural. I think there's a period of self-doubt and the asking the questions of why did he leave this earth? What did I do to maybe be a part of
this? Oh, I know what I did. You know?
What did you do?
Well, my son had substance abuse problems. Well, he was bipolar. Mm. And I was a, what do you call it? An enabler.
Yeah.
It's
out of love, I'm sure.
It's not hard to do as a mother.
Yeah. You want to see your child and anything that you potentially think can help him or stop hurting.
That's
a tough position to be in.
It's probably the hardest position I've ever been, because I can take myself away from something, or I can say, okay, but for your child,
Yeah. It's
like, but it's a lesson I needed to learn. So I'm not enabling to my students, my friends. I don't enable anybody anymore.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Now, post, the sexual abuse phase mm-hmm. of your life, you, in your teens, I mean, you're beautiful. And back then you were a top model. You were in magazines. Yeah. And men must have clamored for you.
Oh, yeah.
And you've had a lot of...
I'm kind of like Velcro, like a man magnet. My kids
call
me. I'm not being... But, I mean, it's just like there's something about me that attracts men. And it isn't necessarily the shape of my nose or something. It's something...
The energy.
It's my energy, because to be honest with you, I am not a relationship person where I need one.
Yeah.
You know, I can count how many relationships I've had on one hand. I'm not a person that needs to have somebody... there all the time. In fact, I'm very happy by myself.
Were you always happy by yourself?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I've always been happy alone.
Well, how old were you when you first got married?
Oh, okay. I got married the first time at 20.
20.
And I had my son when I just turned 21. I had my daughter at 22, because that's what you did back then. Everybody got married at the young age, you know. And my husband was this handsome, you know, sexy. By the way, you didn't just live with people then. You had to marry them to have sex. You know, back then it wasn't like it is now.
So, and this is a question I know might be too personal. You can tell me not to ask it. But because of what happened to you as a younger gal being sexually abused, the tendency in what you read and hear is that you're more sexually promiscuous. Was that the case for you?
No, I was kind of the opposite.
You're the opposite, yeah.
And I wore big baggy clothes to kind of hide my body initially. Mm-hmm. I didn't kind of show myself off,
sure.
You know. So I did kind of the opposite. I kind of retreated and thought, you know, let's pull this back, you know. I mean, I even went to a therapist about it who sexually abused me.
You're kidding.
No. That's why. So I learned.
Did you? Okay. And knowing what you know today, Karen, about allowing people into your space, attracting the law of attraction, attracting these people, these types in your life. When you say my therapist abused me.
It was one my mother took me to. And it wasn't for sexual abuse she took me. It was for, you know, because our lifestyle and everything.
Yeah.
And he ended up coming on to me. And
did he like fully?
He tried.
But, so you stopped him.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I recently listened to a podcast about Larry Nassar, the Olympic gymnast who ended up molesting hundreds of gymnasts, young girls. And it's funny, you know, because a lot of them say this, like, my mom was in the room.
And, well, my mother was outside the room with this therapist. Yeah.
And he pulled the sheet up and he was like touching them. And so I could see how that happens, even with a parent around. But that's just got to be like, who do you trust in the world at that point? I mean, did you just turn around and be like, I don't trust anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still can have trust issues, to be honest with you, with people. I still have trust issues to a degree. I mean, I always come out and I'm pleasant and I'm happy, but there's always another tape playing in my head. And because I can read people so well, I'm always reading what's really going on in my brain.
What do you really want?
Yeah. I do that to a degree. Yeah.
So after your first marriage, when did you start really diving into becoming a, you know, personality in this raw food? Like, when did you find raw food?
Well, what happened when I left my first husband, because my first husband physically abused me. He broke my jaw, my ribs, my shoulder. And I was in the hospital a lot with him, and I actually escaped to a women's shelter with my children.
Is this in Chicago?
Yeah. Yeah. We live.
Getting mad for you. I want to go find these people and beat them up.
Well, he was a typical, I'm sorry, Frank, Italian, who was extremely jealous.
Yeah.
You know, and men would come on to me, and he was insecure in his own way. Plus, he had a substance abuse problem, too, pills and things.
Mm.
And so he physically abused me. So I left him after 9 years of marriage. It took me a while because I had little kids. My kids were 13 months apart. And so it wasn't easy. But my family wouldn't help me because my grandfather was, like I said, from the Victorian age. And because my mother had, you know, gotten pregnant, he put her out. He said to me, well, you know, you didn't ask me before you married him, so I'm not going to, don't ask me, you know, what to do now. So I was kind of left to my own devices and my mother. So I finally got away from him. Didn't divorce him right away, but I got a big dog and he was afraid of dogs. And so I put him out.
And at that point, were you eating typical American diet?
No, I had started because my son was epileptic. I'll throw that into the, my son had his first seizure at 7 months old. And I think that's why he got involved with drugs. But I'm listening to my story, boy, I'm starting to feel sorry
for
me.
Bad for yourself? Don't become a victim, though, Karen.
No. So my son was epileptic. He had his first seizure at 7 months old. And he continued to have seizures. And that's what got me started on the whole holistic route, because I started investigating things. And I realized
food affects seizures.
Right. Epilepsy. And I think he didn't. He went a long period. And then he started having seizures again, I think, at about 3 or 4, somewhere around there. And they put him on Dilantin. And he continued to have seizures, and then they put him on phenobarbital, which this is why I think he got involved with drugs, because they started giving him drugs at a very young age.
It's plausible. It's very possible.
No, I think I believe it. Yeah. That's a street drug, phenobarbital and stuff like that, and they were giving it to a little child. So I took him off all the medications, and we became vegetarian, and I took the sugar out of our diets and all the chemicals out of my house. And Dina was about 3 or 4 by then, and I started. And actually, that's part of the reason my ex, I was able to get rid of him, because he took me to court because I wouldn't give him the medication. I decided to take him off the med. Once again, you know, I'll give you one other story to show you how I've always been my own person, not listening to anybody. So I got pregnant with my daughter when my son was 4 months old, and I didn't know I was pregnant. I thought the foam and breastfeeding would keep you from getting pregnant, right? So I got pregnant again, but I didn't know I was pregnant because I continued to have a cycle. And I went to the doctor, and they did all these tests on me because I had been fainting, and they didn't know what was wrong. And so at the end of the test, they said, oops, guess what? You're pregnant. And I said, oh, my goodness, because my son was colicky, and I thought, another baby? And they said, but we think you need to abort because you've had all these tests. You've had x-rays. You've had the barium thing. They'd given me all these tests. And they said, because of this, the baby could be born disfigured or with problems.
So because of the exposure to x-rays?
And all the tests they gave me to find out what was wrong, and because they didn't know I was pregnant, and I didn't know. So we want to give you an abortion, you know, the pills to, and I said, but I can't do that. I could feel her already. I didn't know it was a her. And they said, well, you know, we can't take any responsibility because this is going to, and I said, well, it is what it is. And I never went back to the doctor, and I have the most gorgeous, beautiful daughter now. And she knows the story, and she wrote me the most beautiful poem. But once again, I didn't listen to anybody.
Yeah. Which is kind of your MO.
That's
You're
my
doing
MO.
Your own thing.
And I'm going to do my own, because I listen to the vibrations sent to me, spirit, God, whatever. I don't listen to outsiders.
Yeah. When did it click for you that this was going to be your livelihood? Like I
had no idea. It never, because that's not how I started. Okay. So I left the abusive husband, who, by the way, is dead now, and I took care of him to the day he died.
Even though he was abusive to you?
Yeah, because he was the father of my children, and things changed, and we had lost a son, and he had cancer. I was supporting these two kids by myself because he never gave me child support. He never helped me. And I was doing real estate. I was doing some modeling. I was waitressing. I had
basically
all these,
whatever it takes. Right?
I was to support my children. Yeah. And I was all by myself. And because I was vegetarian, I wasn't vegan yet. I was vegetarian then. I started healing all these things in myself because I had bad skin and I was a little chubbier than I am now after the kids. I was never fat, but I was bigger because I'm tiny. I'm not supposed to be big. And I started making these changes for myself, and my skin cleared up. Oh, by the way, I never pooped. I never went to the bathroom. I was always constipated.
Really? How many days would you go without going to the bathroom?
Oh, I could go a week. I could go a week and a half.
Really?
Yeah, from childhood. The doctors told my mother that's just her system. That's what they
Which
thought.
Which is baloney, right?
Where'd it go if it's not coming out, right?
And by the way, Karen's poop talks are fascinating. I mean, this is a good chunk of your life. events.
My livelihood.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it kind of started in that. So all of a sudden, I started drinking juice, and I started going to the bathroom. And I was like, wow. And because I am slightly...
When you say juice, you're not talking about apple juice.
No, I'm talking about... I was drinking carrot juice, basically, because I didn't know about all the juices. And I was doing carrot juice, and I wasn't doing all the greens that I do now. But I started going to the bathroom for the first time in my life, and it was like, oh, my God, this is wonderful. People don't realize they're miserable because they're not pooping, right?
I just got to say this. I mean, a good bowel movement is like a kiss from God.
It's unbelievable.
The best thing in the world. I'm sorry.
And if you go weeks without it...
Which, do people do that? I mean, when I hear these stories, like, oh, I haven't gone to the bathroom in 3 days.
Men don't get as constipated as women. Generally, it's changing now. But usually men carry their stress in their hearts. We carry it in the womb, so we hang on to the stress there, and the constipation comes. Anyway, I started going to the bathroom and being obsessive compulsive. Then I started drinking gallons of juice, and my skin started clearing up, and I started getting all this energy, and more clarity came. My thinking was even, I'm smart anyway. I really am. I have a high IQ. But my thinking just got so razor sharp, and it was like, wow. So it just kind of evolved. So then people started asking me, oh, Karen, you know, what's going on? And I would tell them, and they go, well, you know, I've got this. What do you think? And I would just give them my advice that, you know, and it wasn't even stuff I had read. You see, I was downloading it from the universe.
Intuitive and natural, experiential.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all out there for all of us to download.
Yes.
Do you put yourself in the place to get it?
Yeah.
So I started giving advice to people, and people started going, wow, and they were getting results. I was away from the husband by then. And I just started helping people. And then I thought, well, and then more people are calling me for this than the agencies for modeling jobs. And so I started charging a little bit of money, you know. And I would charge, I think in the beginning, I charged like $75 to ask me all the questions and come and see me for a month.
For a month, $75 a month.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
It was a real good deal back then. And it just kind of blew up and grew. Yeah. And then I started having these meetings in my home. I had moved to Evanston by then. And I called them Learn to Live International. And so we had Sherwin's back then, and we had the Golden Carrot on Rush Street. They're all gone now. And I put up signs going, alternative thinking, meet in my home once a month, and let's discuss. So now they call them meetup groups, but, you know, nobody had done it then. And so I started with 6 people in my house. Probably within 9 months to a year, I was getting 90 people in my house coming.
Oh, my God. Your neighbors must be like, what is she doing over there?
Everybody was coming, and we'd sit around, and we'd talk. And then I started bringing in some speakers. I'd met Dr. Wigmore by then. And it just, it grew from me wanting to share what had worked for me.
And financially, 75 times 90 is not a bad gig.
I was making money then.
You're making money. So then that graduated you to opening up several facilities.
Well, I opened up a greenhouse first because nobody had heard of wheatgrass. And I used to go to Optimal Health in San Diego. It was a Dr. Wigmore place. And I was like really on fire then, you know, because everything was happening. I learned about colonics and well, my mother had taken me for colonics when I was little on the west side someplace. So I just really was gung-ho with everything. I mean, I was going to save the world. And nobody had heard of wheatgrass.
Mm-hmm.
And my present husband was my boyfriend back then, said, you're never going to get anybody to drink that shit but you. Seriously. That was his remark. Now
really?
The whole world drinks it, right? So I opened up a greenhouse in Evanston, and I started growing wheatgrass, and I used to sell it. I used to deliver it. Whole Foods, I was the first person to give the first Whole Foods here. They screwed me, but that's Whole Foods.
Yeah, of course.
I was growing wheatgrass and delivering it and selling it. I'd get up at 4 in the morning. I'd go to the greenhouse and do the work. Then I'd get the kids off to school, and then I'd get my wheatgrass, and I would deliver it to my little clients. And I actually had outside the greenhouse, I had a free stand. It wasn't free, where you could come in, juice your own wheatgrass, and you put the money in the basket. It was $1.25 an ounce, and I would, and the deaf guy owned the greenhouse, and I had one bench. Long thing, and I had a thing, and people would drive up, they'd juice their wheatgrass because they'd been to my Learn to Live workshops or whatever,
right.
And put their $1.25 in, and I trusted everybody back then. You know, it was very cool. I mean, I'm...
Different times.
Totally different times. You can get wheatgrass in Alaska now. You could get it anywhere.
Or at 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Which is scary to think about.
But it's exciting.
Yeah. And then you grew your business.
I grew my business. I started... Health department don't listen, but I actually started making food in the greenhouse and in my home, I did sprout salads. One day I'll show you my first little menus. It was really cool. And I started making food and selling it out of the greenhouse with no no sanitation.
No license, no nothing, but with a heart, with your heart, and you know your intentions were great, and
yeah,
people responded.
Yeah, so I was growing and selling raw foods, and I didn't call it raw foods because I knew that would turn people off. I just said just good, healthy food. Fresh food, I called it, because somebody had told me you use the word fresh anywhere, and that's what people... And so I was growing and doing... I was mainly doing sprout salads and stuff like that out of the greenhouse and making some dressings. And then the greenhouse, the family took it over. The guy was deaf, and they wanted to tear it down, so I had to leave there. And I found a place out in Rosemont or something where I started a greenhouse that would rent to me. And I would drive out there, but I had a few people working for me by then. And there was a place called New City Market on Halsted, right across the street from where my big place ended up being. It was the only little vegan restaurant, store in the city back then. Al Hartzman owned it, and he was a raw foodist. He was one of the only other raw foodists I had ever heard of in the world, and he owned this little store. So I said, can I... rent some space from you. And he rented me this back room, and I put some dehydrators in there, and I started making food there. I was growing the wheatgrass out in Rosemont. I was making some food in his store and selling it out of there. He and his wife eventually got divorced, and so I got kicked out of there, so which made me find my place up on Lincoln Avenue.
Yeah.
And it was this burnt out building that nothing had been there in years. And I walked in, I thought, oh, this is going to be a store. Perfect. Had never worked in a restaurant, had never owned a store, right? I always say God takes care of fools and children, and I'm not a child.
Right.
You know, and I just got this bright idea to open up a raw food restaurant in Chicago, the meat district of the world,
right?
And I had no money. The floor was AstroTurf. And the landlord gave me the place for like next to nothing. There had been a 7-Eleven or something in there, and there was all this alcohol still in there. And I put it all out in the alley for the homeless people. And I belonged to Unity.
Must have been a big hit in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it was. And then I belonged to Unity Church at the time, so I had a bunch of the guys from Unity Church came and helped me, and they cleaned it out. And I started going to auctions to buy my equipment. You know, show up in a mini skirt and anybody, can I have that one? You know,
of course,
please,
yeah.
You know, and the cigar guy, yeah, let her have it. You know,
yeah, of course.
So I bought all my equipment used, and I opened up the second raw food restaurant in the country up on Lincoln Avenue. I had no idea what I was doing. Didn't even have my menu together. I had a big party; 450 people showed up. I had bands show up. We were out in the street. Had no idea what I was doing. So. That's how I really started my whole raw movement. And there was one other raw food restaurant. Four guys from Morehouse College had opened up in Atlanta. And then after me, Giuliano opened up in San Francisco. And then it was,
exploded.
And then it's exploded all over the place.
But you've had this like niche, though. You know, you got celebrities that come to you because there's a little personal element to you where you're doing some personal coaching for athletes and celebrities to get ready for movies and stuff, as amongst helping hundreds of thousands of people through the books and seminars you do. But your restaurant wasn't just a restaurant. You went there and you got your poop cleaned. You got your rent.
Well, that was later. I started with the restaurant. Then I rented a place across the street for a wellness center. And I put ozone bathing in there. Nobody had ever heard of ozone bathing.
Yeah.
I had a little yoga studio and I had the colonics and my office. And that was it. Oh, and I had a Rife machine. And I opened that up across the street. And then... they sold that building, the other, and that's when I opened up on Halsted Street. But it was just, I mean, I've climbed all the way. Nothing was handed to me.
No, you're stepping. I mean, if you're listening to your story up until now, you could see clearly the stepping stones that led you to where you're going. But then even then, even though you've hit, like, at that point, like, your name was everywhere. You ended up on...
Well, it wasn't everywhere until I went on Oprah.
Right. So your first appearance on Oprah.
My first appearance.
How did that happen?
Because I was open for almost 7 years there before I was on Oprah, and I was struggling. I was doing my classes, and as I'm teaching a class, people would walk in front of me, you know, to go buy stuff because I couldn't close the place to teach.
Yeah.
But it was amazing the people that I got to come in and speak, because we were kind of like a subculture back then, you know, so everybody came to be at my place. I had Leonard Orr, and I had some of the biggest names that people don't even know who they are now, you know, Dr. Wigmore. It was not a, but then Oprah had me on, and that's when everything kind of blew up and people realized, okay, she's legitimate.
Yeah. Let's start listening to her now.
People who didn't. Because I did have, I mean, you'd see Rolls Royces in front of my place. I had wealthy people coming, but it wasn't a buzzword. Then I was on Oprah, of which she blocked out all the information how to reach me when I was on the show for some reason. But anyway, everybody found me.
Why is that?
I think back then, I don't know, I'm just speculating, that Oprah only promoted you if she had a piece of what you were doing. I suspect.
Yes.
I don't know for sure.
Yes. And or affiliated with a sponsor who might have some conflict with it.
Exactly.
So that's interesting. So did people find you anyway?
That people found me anyway. It was the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
Even though she didn't do anything to promote
Google really wasn't big.
There was no Google. Yeah. Not big. There was no Google.
Wasn't exist, right?
No. There was no Google or internet or anything. In fact, we did everything through the mail. But once again, you know, you're on that right vibration and people found me and I just moved on from there. You know, I just continued to move on. And then I came up with my first book and nobody would publish it because of the name.
Which is?
Soak Your Nuts.
Soak Your Nuts. Why? I mean, there's nothing offensive about that.
Well, this is now too.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, this is like maybe 9-10 years ago.
And Soak Your Nuts was about the idea that you can create most or replicate a lot of what people love in traditional, you know, cuisine.
Well, so, no, the reason for soaking your nuts is to break down the enzyme inhibitors in the fats so that people that are allergic to nuts can even eat soaked nuts. Okay?
So you're telling me if I had a peanut allergy, I could still...
If you did them with digestive enzymes, and I don't want anybody to run out and do that because, you know, I want to be responsible about it. But yes, I have had clients get over all of their allergies. I was allergic to everything known to man. I have no allergies anymore. Allergies are based in digestion from my thinking. And so if your digestive system is off, you're going to be allergic to certain foods that come in and your body can't digest them.
So this brings up a good point. Now, you say from your experience, your perspective.
Yes.
There's a lot of controversy out there, especially since the internet boomed and especially since everyone's got an opinion and has the right to post and say things. And, you know, I've followed your program for years and there's times where for years I'll eat meat, you know, and then I'll go back. And, you know, right now I'm right in the middle somewhere and I'm considering maybe going back to eating, you know, just plant-based. But there's diehard sides to this. There's two sides that really want to go at it aggressively, you know, especially with paleo and keto and, you know, all these things that are popularized and marketed and you're hearing about them. And then you got your diehard vegans and raw foodists. And Instagram is a great way to see this balance and the fight and the comments and the memes and all these things that go at each other. Are you a hater of meat? Like, are you?
Oh, absolutely not. The world would be overpopulated if everybody ate like me.
Right.
That's how I look at it. You got to have population control because we're out of control. No, and that was a mean thing to say. I don't mean that. But the thing of it is, no, I'm not I'm not one of these vegans that's going to be pissed at you for what you're doing because I think we're all here for our own university, for what we need to learn. And so when people go, well, but so-and-so says this, I always go, for every pro, there's a con, and for every con, there's a pro. So it's up to you to educate yourself and see what your heart tells you is right. So maybe you're supposed to eat meat for the next 5 years and get deathly ill or get cancer or something, so you take it seriously. Maybe you're supposed to be a hunter or whatever it is because you need to learn those lessons. You know what? Excuse me, when I get criticized, because I do get criticized on Instagram, and they'll say, well, you know, I wear makeup, you know, or I may wear wigs sometimes, or I do things a bit. And they go, well, you know, you're supposed to be. And I go, you know what? Here's the deal. I love zebras. I think it's one of the most beautiful animals on the planet. But I would be so bored if we had nothing but zebras. You know, I want variety.
Yeah.
And variety is what teaches us.
Do you ever crave a burger, a steak?
Oh, God, no. I'm so repulsed by it.
We were on an island, and I know you say this all the time. You have a pile of vegetables and fruit or a pile of meat. Your instinct's going to go to fruit. But if you had no other choice.
Do you know, remember that movie Alive?
Yes.
Where they had to start eating
each other. Yeah.
But there was one woman who wouldn't, so she died? That would be me.
Really? Wow.
There's
I'd
no
give you a
way.
Piece of my thigh. I have a very meaty thigh. It'd be very good. I'd sacrifice
a thigh.
But
here's the deal. Eating your thigh is no different than eating a cow's thigh.
Yeah.
It's an animal.
Yes.
Just because you think and you speak doesn't make your meat any different than the cow's, because they have a heart. Do you know, I learned this from my spiritual teacher, and I wasn't aware of it, like one of the reasons cows are sacred in India. Because if we're in this room and a cow is two rooms over and I start crying or I feel very sad, that cow will cry for me. He feels the empathy of my pain.
Yes. Yeah. Same study with dogs I've read.
Yes.
Too. Like, dogs don't communicate through traditional verbal means.
No.
They communicate through energy.
Exactly.
And I can see it when I come home, or if I have a call and I'm in a bad mood, or which isn't often, I could see, like, my dog almost cowers and looks at me like don't hurt me or help. How can I help you?
Yeah.
And they're phenomenal.
You see, you're talking about dogs. People don't eat dogs, except in some countries they do. True. I'm talking about cows have the same feelings.
Yeah.
Okay, so that ground up beef.
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that.
I have to tell you, the other day when I was driving home, because I live in the suburbs now, and I do want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I was driving home, and one of those big trailer trucks was going by with their little noses sticking out, and I started crying because I know they know what's about to happen to them. I know that the feeling that they're going through, the terror, and I can feel that.
Yeah.
So no, I could never eat an animal. I could never eat a human. I could never, to be honest with you, I can't even kill an ant. This is what's funny. So my new thing, I live in a house now. I lived in a high rise for 30 years. I was up in a palace, you know.
City girl,
So now I live in a house. And I sit down to eat my papaya or something, and this little ant comes out to meet me like, oh, is it dinner time? And so he walks over, and I'm going, can't kill you. Don't want to share my food. So what I did was, and I've caught five now, I took some papaya and I put it in a plastic container over here and put it on their side. So they go in to get their own food, and then I put a top on and I take them outside.
Look at you. That could be a busy, that could be a long day if you're going to do it all day.
No, it's not.
But you haven't lived in the suburbs in forever. Wait until, like, you know, the rest
of
the
animals. But I did buy one of those sonic things,
yeah.
The sound things.
Yeah, that's smart. So, you know, if you don't eat meat, but you're okay with people who do,
and I do wear leather shoes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
I'm getting away from it, just like when I got away from fur coats, but I'm still in my process too. So how am I going to judge somebody else?
Sure. And that's really what it comes down to, is I think people have this need today because we're so polarized in every single subject.
Everything.
Everything has become so sensitive, but we can't talk about anything. And if we do, you're on this side, I'm on that side, we're going to fight about it. You know, there's also, you have a good disposition where you're like, yeah, I accept you, even if you come to my classes and you're eating steak right before you come in.
Okay, I got another story for you.
Okay. Share it. Let's hear it.
So I have this guy that was sitting in my wellness center. I have a spa where we do colon therapy, oxygen bathing, lymph drainage. We have a hyperbaric chamber. And he's sitting there, and my dog goes to work with me, and he runs up and he's playing with the guy. You know, the guy's loving him and he's being so sweet to him. And I look at the guy's t-shirts, and he's got two gun things across on his shirt, and it says infidels. So and he's a white guy, right? So I walked by and I said, oh, what does your t-shirt mean? You know, and he goes, nothing like that. He was there with his girlfriend, right? And I said, no, what does it mean? I'm curious. Nothing. I said, he says, death to the infidels. And I thought, wow. And I said, oh, okay. But then my mind immediately went, look how loving he is to my dog. We have something in common.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking for the commonality. And that's all we need to do as humans. We're going to be so different, and that's good.
Yes.
It's not a world full of zebras.
Exactly.
But we have to find our commonality where we can find love and something we share. And then you go off and do your thing. I'm not going to go to dinner and eat meat with you, you know, but that's your choice at this point in your
life. But you'd be okay sharing a dinner with somebody.
Absolutely.
If you're eating
How are they ever going to learn to do anything different if an angry, mad person tells them what they shouldn't do? If somebody is loving and fun and cute and happy,
yeah,
I'm going to listen to that person.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, and I've watched all the documentaries out there and you know, read enough literature on both topics, you know, and there's no doubting. And if you haven't done one of Karen's cleanses or tried juicing.
Got one coming up, by the way.
Yeah,
we'll
talk about it shortly. But I feel like you feel better. I'm sorry, you do. You just feel better. Like, and I think it has a lot to do with digestion, where your body's not bogged down dealing with breaking down meat and other, you know, processed foods. So there is that sense of clarity, you know. And I think my personal issue has always been sustainability, based on just pure instinctual like smells when you smell like fried food being cooked and like meatballs being prepared. And, you know, culturally, I'm Italian, so food is our life, you know, and to change that, you know, we both, you know, Johnny, you introduced me to Johnny Juicer, and he grew up an Italian boy and like all that stuff and did the traditional Italian and then got sick and had major issues like
fat.
We all do. And he was fat. Now he's like shredded, ripped, and his like your path he's followed, and he's become an influencer in that space, in the juicing space.
Well, here's the deal. What one of the things that I really try to impress upon people in my classes is what we don't realize is we start out as a little baby like this. And how do you grow into this? From food. You become the food you eat. I mean, food becomes you. That's what people aren't paying attention to. You become the food. So do I want to be something smelly and dead and whatever, or do I want to be something bright and light that the sun nurtured? You know, it's getting that thought process because you become, I know they say you are what you eat, but when you think about it, every bit of skin, everything that you grow into is the food you have eaten. Food becomes human.
No doubt.
You become the human being. I mean, you can't, nothing else happens that way. So for me, once you get that little thing turns in your head, because cause and effect, how can you expect to do what wasn't intended to go in here and be okay?
Right. And that's where illness comes from. And
that's everything. It doesn't come from out here. Yes, we have predisposed weaknesses, but you become what you eat. This is why I'm not dead in my 40, 50, or 60s like my family.
Not even not dead, looking amazing at 72.
By the way, I will say no Botox, no surgery, no fillers, nothing. I swear to you. Well, you're not.
Can you imagine if you did, though?
Like, I know. I know. Maybe at 90, I may do something. You know why I don't? For many reasons. First of all, I don't want to cover up my roadmap. Yeah. Everything, like I'm looking at your face, your adrenals and your kidneys are a little challenged right now. You know, this is under your eyes. The lines that people get across their forehead, that's excessive mucus. This is your small intestines and your liver. So this is your organs prolapsing. So I don't want to hide what's going on because I can start to eat too much sugar or something. And I'm talking about mangoes. I'm not talking about donuts. And I watch this little line come. Well, this is my spleen pancreas. So I want to monitor. I think God gave us this in a mirror to look in so we can monitor what's going on in here.
So it's your health map, your face.
It's my health map. And the other thing is that first of all, I can't tell a lie. My office will tell you it's hysterical. Somebody came in one day and they wanted to ask some questions, and for me to give them the right answer would have been the worst thing to do. And they couldn't find me because I was hiding under my desk.
you don't want to tell the truth.
I didn't want to tell the truth, but I couldn't tell a lie. So I was hiding under my Nancy. They still laugh about that, right?
That's great.
So I can't tell a lie. I'm incapable of lying. You can ask everybody that knows me. And I have to remain authentic. So how can I do something to my face? How can I show people the possibility of what we can do if I start doing all this stuff? I have no problem with people choosing to do that. You know, and maybe when I stop teaching at 90 or something, maybe I'll decide to see what it's like. I doubt it because it terrifies me to put something in my body. I never vaccinated my children. I don't get flu shots.
That's a whole other show right there.
I don't put anything in my body that I didn't create or buy.
Do you think raw food and vegan lifestyle, plant-based, can cure cancer?
Do I think? I know. Do I think? Because cancer, you know, we all have cancer cells. But do we create a fertile environment for it to metastasize? They're like their little army. They're all in different places doing, you know, their thing. They're put there. My teacher, Victoris, can explain it better than I can. But when you create a fertile ground of acidity and mucus and yeast and sugar and sweet, then they all come together as a force, and there's your cancer. Right?
What would you say would be the number one culprit if you were to pinpoint one thing food-wise? To say this thing,
there is no one thing. It's a combination of everything. We've been designed to think that there's a one bullet for everything.
But is there any one more element that is more attractive to cancer in the body? Is sugar more attractive than
sugar? But sugar feeds the yeast, which the yeast creates more mucus. You know, so it's kind of like. I really don't want to get into that one bullet thing. I mean, it's the animal products. It's the dead meat.
It's a combination of things.
It's a combination of everything. No one thing is going to do it. I recently was working with a woman. She's the most recent. She came with stage 3 cervical cancer. They wanted to give her a hysterectomy. Do everything. 4 months later, they can't find cancer in her body.
Because of what? Tell me what you did.
Well, we did. We put her on a living food lifestyle where she was eating all raw foods, but she was also doing all the oxygen treatments in my place. I have a hyperbaric chamber. I have ozone bathing, which is even stronger than that, the third molecule of oxygen, so it gets in your system. Cancer cannot live in an oxygenated environment, period. It's anaerobic. So we don't have oxygen in the air we breathe any longer. When man was created, the oxygen levels were at 38%. After the Industrial Revolution, they were down to 22%. We're living in the teens in some places like Gary, Indiana, 9%. So cancer is...
These are scientific facts.
These are scientific facts. So people aren't eating raw like me where you get oxygen in your food, because when you cook your food, you lose enzymes, oxygen, and everything. So you create a perfect storm, so to speak, for cancer to thrive. Now, some people can get away with the negative stuff longer than others. I always say the lucky ones get it sooner so that they get to change.
Yeah, that's crazy. Now, you know, some of the tools you used to overcome your adversities in life, spiritual being one.
I pray and meditate every morning of my life. People go, in fact, it's just a piece of, the food is just a piece of it. I pray and meditate every morning of my life. And over the years, it's up to like 2 hours now, a little more than 2 hours. You know, I'm up at like 4:35 and I start. But I could no more not do that than I could have water in the morning, which is the first thing you should have before anything. You know,
so no cell phones in the morning, no TV, no radio. You just
cell phone, because some of my meditations are on there. I use Insight Timer.
No, me too. Yeah.
Yeah, so I but I don't look at anything else.
So you're not on Instagram right away. You're not checking the news.
I don't Instagram.
Look at news?
You know what? For a while there, I got a little addicted to it because things were so frighteningly crazy. But then I thought, you know what? You got to make a change where you can. You know, when I go vote, I will. Not that I know how much that'll do either. But if I can awaken people, awaken their minds, if I can help them to awake, that's what I need to do more than listening to what the news is doing, because that can drive you crazy.
Sure. I read some studies recently that
makes you depressed.
Well, make you depressed. When you ingest that energy, that you're more likely to have that stick in the morning, and then it becomes a part of the day, and then you become...
Exactly. And it interrupts your digestion,
completely.
Everything.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Every time I talk to you, like, I feel guilty. I feel like...
No,
and it's not your fault.
Supposed to feel awake.
I feel awake, but I get mad at myself because I know what you've said for years. I've known you now for 10 years and been in your classes for lots of those. And, you know, when you go back to, you know, falling out of alignment with the food, and I've had my physical challenges. I've had, since I've spoken to you last, I've had my heart, my blood pressure was up. I had liver enzymes were like through the roof.
Is the blood pressure in place now?
Back down.
Are you on medication?
Nope.
Oh, good.
Meditating.
You know, it'll make you impotent.
No, I'm not.
No, the medication for high blood pressure, men don't realize that it makes you impotent.
Yeah, I won't mess with that. I told the doctor straight up, I will meditate. And I know this for a fact because I've proven it. I was sitting in the doctor's office, in the cardiologist's office, about to go in for an appointment. I usually get little white coat syndrome, so my blood pressure goes up normally. So I put on a 5-minute meditation, deep breathing, and I got myself super calm. Oh. Went into the session, and my blood pressure at that time was floating around like 150 over 90, which isn't terrible,
but
it's, you know, the traditional is 120 over 80. And so I went in there, and my blood pressure was 117 over 70 from meditation alone. The doctor was like, what did you do? I was like, I was breathing in your lobby for like deep breaths. And there's a technique that I'm sure you know.
You put oxygen in your system.
Put oxygen in my system. I calm down and I put my tongue. There's a technique.
Top
of your mouth. Mm-hmm. And you breathe in for 4 seconds. You hold it for 7 and exhale for 8. Mm-hmm. And I did that over and over again. And then it does something systemically to literally lower your heart rate. And you can even hear my voice right now calming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just does. It works. And if the world just knew this and we'd get
the
off the medicine.
Animals that live the longest breathe the slowest.
Yeah.
Turtles, elephants, they breathe very slow. The animals that live the shortest, your dogs, they have a shorter lifespan.
Yes.
It's that slowing down the breath. So I do it every morning because I'm a type A personality to begin with. So I really need it, you know. And so meditation and prayer. I pray also. So I speak and I listen.
Do you believe in a religion?
I believe that religion is here to keep society and the world
control.
In control. Otherwise, people would be crazy. I follow, well, I'm a Sufi by choice. I went to India with my Sufi teacher, but I have Buddha statues. I believe in Hinduism. I believe in everybody.
Yeah. I believe in people who believe. Yeah, I do.
Like
I do.
Yeah.
I guess I really do.
I believe in everybody. I like to go to church sometimes just because I like the energy and being in one.
Yeah.
You know, especially gospel churches where the music is good.
Yep.
I've gone to Catholic church. I've gone to the Buddhist where you do the slow walk. So I kind of just, where am I going to make my connection today?
Spiritually pick and choose what fits for the day, which is a great philosophy.
Yes. I kind of believe in it. I believe in Jesus. I believe in Buddha.
Yeah.
I believe that there are masters that come to awaken the world at different times. And because we didn't have Google and everything, just different people in different parts attached themselves. But now, you know, with the way we have things, I'm a real big believer in Sadhguru now. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No.
Sadhguru. He's a modern day guru who drives a motorcycle long, but he is beyond brilliant.
I actually have heard about him. Now that you said the motorcycle.
He's done TED Talks.
Yes.
And I don't know how I hadn't heard of him, but I listen to him. I live in the suburbs now, and everybody goes, oh, how do you do that drive? Well, my car is a classroom now. I'm learning Hindi. I'm improving my Spanish. And I listen to Sadhguru, who just puts me in the right space.
That's awesome.
For everything.
I'm going to check him out. We're getting close to the end here, Karen.
A couple questions
that I'd like to wrap up with, and we'll talk about how people can reach you and you know, find some of your products out there. At 72, what do you see for yourself for the next 20 years?
Ooh, I love that question. Okay. I'll try and make it quick. Okay.
Yeah.
But what I decided was for the second half of my life, because I think I'm going to be around to about 120 is what I'm choosing. And I may decide
that.
I want to leave after that.
Will you still be bikini modeling at 120?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Much to my daughter's anger.
Yeah.
But, I said, so it's time to do something totally different. And the universe kind of kicked my butt to put me there. But where I've been in a high rise, now I'm back to the earth. People who live over 100 years old are not in the gym for an hour. You never hear that they were in the gym. They're in the land. They're digging. They're doing gardening. They're walking.
Yeah, connecting with earth.
They're connecting with earth and life.
Yeah.
Okay? They're not busy running around, getting to the gym for an hour here and getting over here. Those aren't the people that are 100 years old or more. It's the people who are living in the blue zones, and what are they doing that's differently? So I've decided to create a blue zone for myself in the suburbs of Chicago.
Nice.
I'm also going to live in Costa Rica 4 months out of the year, which is a blue zone.
Yeah.
I've just started doing retreats there.
I saw that.
It was beyond
fabulous.
I'd love
to join you one of these days.
November 6th is the next one.
Really?
Yep.
How can people find out more information about that?
Well, the website for it, because we're doing a new website for it. We did the first one in March, and Johnny Juicer and I are doing it, and my teacher, Victoris Kolbenskis.
Yes.
So we're going to be doing them twice a year for now. Until
How old is Victor?
Victor's in his 80s.
I seen him hanging upside down in one of your videos.
Yeah, and he's a walking encyclopedia. Where I have all the intuitive stuff, he's got all the scientific data.
Yeah.
I mean, he can give you, it's unbelievable. So the second half of my life, I'm never going to retire. I'm always going to be teaching as long as people want to listen. I've just had to find a different way to do it because there's so many people doing what I do now, which is a good thing.
Yeah, but no one's you. You know, like, I think that's the differentiator here is like you're.
Well, and I live it. It's not just something I've read from a book and decided to do. I live it 2,000%.
Yeah, no doubt. I remember the first time meeting you, you were walking around with avocado in your hand, eating it like an apple. And I turned to my then girlfriend, who's now my wife, Sherry. I'm like, what is she eating? And she's like, an avocado. I'm like, really? Like,
people
that's
eat
gross. I remember asking you, I'm like, Karen, what do you eat? And you're like, oh, just an avocado. You're like, it's great.
Yeah.
And you just walked away. You like took a bite and walked away. I'm like, really? And I've fallen in love with avocado since that
day. It's the most perfect food.
It's
a perfect food. It's a protein. It's everything.
And they're
it's
sexy
a vegetable.
Too. Avocados are sexy.
Aren't they?
They're slimy. They're yummy.
I'll tell you what's sexy is a papaya.
A papaya is sexy.
Yes. Papaya is sexy.
For many reasons. Yes. Where can people find you online and on social?
Well, you can go to my website, KarenRaw.com, and Karen is spelled, which you spelled wrong today, K-A-R-Y-N. Karen, KarynRaw. You can go to KarenRaw.com. I'm in Chicago. I'm on Instagram. You can direct message me there. It's under Karen Calabrese. I have tons of YouTubes up, me speaking in Lithuania all over the world. You can access those YouTubes.
Awesome.
What else? I have a book out Soak Your Nuts. I have two books, and I'm in the process of doing a third book.
Good for you.
It'll be more my life story, like what we talked about here That's today, great. Too.
I'm sure you had held back a couple of nuggets of gold.
Nah, I don't know how to do that.
I'm awesome. An open Good for
book.
Us.
Yeah. I don't know how to hold back. I really don't. I'm an open book.
Awesome.
So Soak Your Nuts, the cleanse, and then Soak Your Nuts, the recipe book, and it's cooked recipes and raw. I truly believe that detoxing the body, and I've been teaching it for 45 years, is more important than any label you give yourself, raw food, vegan, vegetarian, blah, 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 blah. Cleaning your body out to see what your next step is the most important thing to do.
Definitely. And gosh.
And by the way, don't beat yourself up, because I also remind people that you don't hear one or two lectures on law and you become a lawyer. You True. Don't have one or two in a You have to get it over, and they don't play one commercial and expect you to get it. So you haven't done anything wrong. You're in your process.
Yes.
Do not beat yourself up.
I will continue my process, and part of this journey of that, you know, doing the Human Renovation Podcast is learning from people like you and spreading the word and the knowledge, you know, to...
It's wonderful what you're doing, John.
Thank you.
You always have. You've given me a voice for so long, and
Thank
I
you.
So appreciate that from the bottom
and
of my
I will
heart.
Continue as long as you continue, Karen.
I'm never stopping. So at 119...
we'll be sitting here.
Right.
Thanks for coming, Karen. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you so much. Love you.
Hey guys, I really appreciate you tuning in to the Human Renovation Project. It's really been a personal passion of mine, and to share it with all of you is just such a blessing. And if you want to comment on today's guest or the show, leave me some feedback, I'd love to hear from you. Visit me over on Instagram at Frank Fontana. If you're on Apple Podcasts, just take some time to give me a review or your feedback. It'll be super important to make the show even better. If you have some guest suggestions, I'm all ears. And again, thank you for taking the time to spend a little bit of your afternoon, morning, or evening with me. So I just want to leave you with this. Everybody you know, every human who walks this planet, on some level, is going through something you have no idea about. We are all under construction. So go out there, have some patience, have some compassion, have some empathy, and love each other.